It seems that an increasing number of Americans who just a month ago would have said that they were opposed to racial profiling now would say that it is necessary, maybe even appropriate, to fight terrorism. And just to cite a couple of results that came out of polls and surveys, and there have been a lot of them. For example, a recent poll done by CNN and USA Today and Gallup found that 58% of Americans supported the notion that all Arabs, including American citizens, should undergo special, more intensive security checks before boarding airplanes in this country. 49% said they thought that all Arabs, including U.S. citizens, should have to carry a special ID card. The LA Times found in a poll that they did a couple of weeks ago overwhelming support in the wake of the attacks on September 11th for allowing law enforcement to randomly stop people who may fit the profile of suspected terrorists. This morning, in this part of Focus 580, we will talk about racial profiling and Asian Americans. And we have two guests here with us in the studio. George Yu, who is head of Asian American Studies at the University of Illinois and is a political scientist, and he's certainly been here before on the program. We've talked about China and relations between China and the United States. Also with us is Palasana Balgopal, who is an emeritus professor of social work here at the University of Illinois. And they will be taking part in a panel. This is the Fall Asian American Studies Program Council meeting that happens on Thursday afternoon, tomorrow afternoon. It's taking place at the University Y, talking about this issue, and there'll be some other people taking part in this. And I would expect that if people who are interested in attending the discussion, listening and taking part, certainly should feel welcome Thursday afternoon at 4 in Latzer Hall of the University Y. And we thought it would be a good thing for us to spend a little time talking about here this morning, and they were good enough to say they'd come over and give us some of their time. The number, if you'd like to be involved in the conversation this morning, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Thank you both very much for being here. It certainly is clear that in the days following the terrorist attack on the 11th of September, Asian Americans, Asians in this country, have faced increasing discrimination. And in fact, it seems that Americans were not even being very discriminating in our discrimination, because not only is anyone who looks vaguely Middle Eastern has faced this, excuse me, even Latinos apparently have experienced it. People have been booted off of airplanes because the other passengers said these folks made them nervous. We have seen things that have to very clearly be labeled hate crimes. People have been killed just because they looked like they were Middle Eastern. How do we understand this? How do we think about this? And does history give us any guidance in thinking about this and dealing with this? What do you think?
Well, if I may start, first of all, I think all Americans, Asian Americans included, we mourn the losses of 11th of September, and we join in others to say how terrible the event was, and we hope the people who were involved can be brought to justice, as President Bush and others have said. But having said that, I think it's very, very important that we do not go overboard in the moment of passion and condemn all who look different. Among Asian Americans, we have a saying that because most of us, if not all of us, look slightly different, we are forever foreigners in a land which is very free, which we came on our own accord, but which we are a minority. And I think America, as we used to say, as a melting pot that welcomes all, has to be very careful in not going to the extreme and put in unnecessary burdens and pressures. And in this sense, as we know, since the 11th September event, it has put a panic into subgroups. For example, we know people who are, for example, from the southern European regions, the heritage, who look a little bit darker, some of them have expressed fears that they may be mistaken for Arab Americans, and they're very concerned. And I've even seen a report of Arab Americans taking their children to county registers to change their names to Smith because of the concerns. I think we have to be very, very careful, because this country is made up of many racial groups. And I think, as we will hear later on, there have been incidents that are very disturbing, and we want to raise the awareness, consciousness, of how we deal with this very delicate issue of not mislabeling people.
Yeah, I agree what Professor Yu is saying. I, too, agree with him that the tragic events of September 11th is something which has affected all Americans, and we are all very sad about it. The repercussion of the same, as has been mentioned, is that certain groups of American population are treated differently. There is a fear, there is a panic, and there is sometimes even a very irrational kind of behavior on the part of many Americans. Now, one of such groups is what we call commonly as South Asians, that is, people who come from the subcontinent of India. South Asia usually consists of countries such as Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, Nepal, and Sri Lanka. Now, we have had many tragic incidences where such hate crimes have taken place against people coming from this part of the world. For instance, one Sikh gentleman — Sikhs are those individuals who usually wear turban and beard, and oftentimes ordinary people mistake that as the Afghans or even Bin Laden's group because of the turban and the beard. But they are very different. They are not in any shape or form connected with that group. Now, on September 19th, in Mesa, Arizona, one of the Sikhs was even killed. The other part of it is that recently on our own campus at University of Illinois, last Friday, the 21st of September, there was a hate crime against a student of South Asian origin, and he was beaten up on the campus. So these kinds of things are not just incidental cases. There are quite a bit happening, and one has to be very careful that one does not generalize these things. As Professor Yu pointed out, that this is a country of immigrants. Everybody has come here with their own volition. The South Asian presence is also significant. And just historically, if one wants to look at it, that the first Sikhs, they came to the West Coast in 1890. And they have been the farmers there. And there was a lot of anti-miscegenation law. They could not marry interracially. They could not bring their wives. So the group did not become too large. But at the same time, their presence has been significant. They have contributed extremely significantly for the development of our American society, working on the railroads like other Asian Americans who did that. They have been instrumental in developing the peach and apricot, almonds, pistachio produce of California. They have been very instrumental in developing the timber industries in Washington and as well as in British Columbia. Now, the South Asian population remained very small till 1965 legislation, when the immigration of the quota system. Till then, from each of the Asian countries, only 100 people were allowed to come immigrate to this country. In 1965, when the legislation was passed and which abolished the quota system, we developed what we call as a preferential system. That means people who brought some technical skills and professional know-hows, and the population since then of South Asians has increased significantly. The 2000 census officially comes out around 1.5 million, but I would imagine to say that it will be a little over 2 million. There are about almost 500,000 people who are of South Asian origin, who are primarily from the Caribbean islands, Trinidad, Tobago, and British Guyana, which is now Guyana. They have come, and many times they are counted as Caribbeans and not as South Asians. So with this kind of population increasing, there is a fear, because these people bring very drastically different values, different ethics, religion is different, their food habits, and oftentimes even clothing, because the South Asian immigrants probably are one of the few immigrants who still maintain their native dressing code. And so that, again, stands them out as not as an American. Mm.
I should take a moment here to introduce again our guests. Palasana Balgopal is Professor Emeritus of Social Work at University of Illinois. George Yu is Head of Asian American Studies, or of... do I have that right, George?
Yes, you do. I'm also wear that hat, too.
all right. He's also Professor of Political Science at University of Illinois. We're talking about racial profiling and Asian Americans. We'll continue here in just a second. For people who would like to join the conversation here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Just to pick up on that point, I wonder whether indeed you think that now, as a result of what happened, there will be increasing restrictions on immigration that would apply perhaps not just perhaps with people who would be coming from countries of the Middle East, but to South Asians and West Asians, too. There might be some sort of a blanket statement that said, well, we're just going to be very careful about it. And any Asian person wanting to come to the United States.
That certainly is a very important question. Now, as we know that in the United States, international students, a large number of them, they come, including at our own campus. And what is disturbing now is, for instance, the senator from California, Senator Feinstein, she is introducing a bill to restrict student visas for next 6 months. Now, there might be some, you know, validity in it, but at the same time, one has to be aware that South Asia, as well as East Asia, most of all the Asian countries, do send a large number of international students, and we are very well adjusted on the campus, and it'll be a shame to put that kind of a restriction. Now, I hope it doesn't have a ripple effect and move from the student visa to some other kinds of things like visitors, and I'm sure that will have some impact on those individuals who are waiting to get their residency, or what is commonly called as a green card. Applications being approved and that not.
Hmm. I very much appreciated the comments by Professor Bhagapur, because I think there is among Asian Americans and other immigrant population that there is a certain degree of apprehension in this moment of passion. We might institute laws and restrictions that indeed have been the basis and have made this country great, because Asian Americans, as other minority groups of different religion, different ethnic backgrounds, have made an important contribution to the economic well-being and social diversity of America. And if we're going to single them out, I think not only is this, in my opinion, morally wrong, but it could have an immediate impact upon America itself. But going back to the question of racial or profiling, somebody has made this interesting comment, which may or may not be irrelevant to our case. And it is this. After the Oklahoma bombing. Mm-hmm. Would it have been appropriate for the FBI or some other agency of government to send out a bulletin said, we should now watch out for all white Americans who drive a pickup, a truck. When we think about that, it is rather disturbing because this is coming now to haunt people like Asian American, others who look different, because now there is this suspicion, as we said earlier, of South Asians, and not to mention Arab Americans, because they look, as we look, different. We are under suspicion. America, unfortunately, has a history which doesn't speak well for the future. For example, as we know, and we will talk about it on Thursday, following the Second World War, we interned over 120 Japanese 120, Americans, 120,000, I beg your pardon, because they look different and they were under suspicion. In the last few years, we have the famous Vincent Ching, a case up in Detroit, who was beaten to death because people took him for a Japanese and they thought the Japanese were stealing a share of the automobile market. And just recently, as we also know, we have the famous Wen Ho Lee case that he was accused of spying, and it is now quite clear one of the reasons they centered on him because he was a Chinese American or Asian American, and he was suspicious. He was suspected of doing a disloyal thing, but this has been proven not to be true. But this is all what I would call falls under the category of racial profiling, and I think we have to be conscious that this could be a very dangerous thing. And my fear now, in the heat of passion at this moment, though we have to be on guard, we don't carry this too far.
Mm-hmm. David, I just would like to add a little bit. Now, when you're talking about racial profiling, we have got to look at it that who is doing this profiling? Is it done by the law and order? Or it's also done by the citizens at large. Now, immediately after the tragic incidents of September 11th, number of cases were reported by South Asians, especially the Sikh community, who were either arrested or interrogated by the police authorities on suspicion. But then we also know that a large number of these population have been victims of hate crime by general public. There are a number of instances where young children throughout the country who are of South Asian origin have been getting hostile remarks by their peers in schools in the neighborhood, and they are scared to go to the school. As I mentioned earlier, the gentleman at Mesa, Arizona, was killed on September 19th. So, you know, the whole issue we have to also look at, that the hate crime and racial profiling is something, if we have to be, take it seriously, it has to be done at all levels. Many of the South Asians are working on jobs which are risky jobs, as far as I'm concerned. A large number of them certainly are very professionals, and they are in highly specialized technical fields, whether it's medicine or engineering and other kinds of things like computer science. We also have a fairly significant presence of South Asians on other employment, which are kind of risky things. For instance, if one looks at the 7-Eleven, those convenience stores, which are located in off areas, and most of those things are owned by the South Asians, 30 to 40% of the cab drivers in major metropolitan areas are driven by South Asians. You find newsstands. Now, for instance, all you have to do is just go into New York and then see the subway stations, and the newsstands owners are virtually all owned by South Asians. So gas stations, you know, one can go on. And these are the places which are open sometimes 24 hours, and the place for major crime is that. And now with this kind of thing taking place in this climate, there's a danger of people just going and taking out their anger on these innocent, solid citizens.
Let me ask you this question, because I think that there are some people who would say, they would say, we want to say obviously hate crimes are wrong. We also would say that for law enforcement, for example, to target someone who was just walking down the street, minding his or her own business, just based on what they looked like, would be wrong. But they would say, particularly in a situation like this, there would be nothing wrong with increased scrutiny of a person who appeared to be of Middle Eastern origin who was getting ready to get on an airplane, for example. They're saying, in broadly, we say no, profiling is bad. But in a specific situation where we're hoping to prevent a specific sort of crime, I think there are some people who would say, well, okay, as long as we're just talking about this very narrow application. Do you see a distinction there?
What my fear, David, in this one is really that this is a country which protects every citizen. It's a country which protects everyone's liberty. And the constitutional aspect of that is unique, probably. You know, there are some other countries, but the United States is certainly one of the places where we can be very proud of. So indiscriminately picking somebody, we have got to be looking at how that affects the civil liberty issue. And are we violating the constitutional rights which has been given? Of course, George is a political scientist and he knows more about it, and I don't know where you think about it.
Oh, no. I would fully support what you said. I think our constitutional rights are very precious. We are among the few countries in the world. There are others, of course, that have equal rights. But I don't think, as I keep using the word in the moment, in the heat of the passion, while we want to safeguard our lives and property, we have to think very carefully before, as Attorney General Ashcroft apparently is pushing Congress to pass certain laws. We have to be very, very careful that we don't go over the edge, because once we do go over the edge, the question is how do we recover these liberties and how it is going to change our lives. And I'm very concerned about that, as I'm sure many other people. We do want to safeguard our lives and property, but at the same time, these principles of freedom that we have fought so hard, this country has fought so hard, must be safeguarded.
Let me just, as we're here at the midpoint, I'd like to introduce again the guests for this part of Focus 580. George Yu, professor of political science here at University of Illinois, Balasana Balgopal, who's an emeritus professor of social work. They're here to talk about this issue. Here we're talking about racial profiling in Asian Americans. But I do want to mention one more time that the Asian American Studies Program Council will be having their fall meeting on Thursday afternoon at the University of Hawaii, and we'll be talking about this issue. And Professor Yu, Professor Balgopal will be among the panelists for this discussion, talking about why it is that it seems so often in times of national crisis and tension, Asian Americans have faced increasing discrimination, and what perhaps history can tell us about all of this. And they have said that anybody in and around the campus that's interested in listening to discussion or taking place should certainly feel welcome to stop by Thursday afternoon, 4 o'clock at Latzer Hall at the University of Hawaii. And, of course, questions are welcome, 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Just for a little bit, I wonder if I could ask you a different sort of a question, and you could speak about it from your perspective of being people involved in higher education. According to the Middle Eastern Studies Association, out of all of the colleges and universities in the United States, something between 50 and 70 and apparently they don't really know the exact number, offer degrees in Middle Eastern or Islamic studies. Apparently, one of the best-known programs, Middle Eastern Studies in the country, is at University of Texas at Austin, and there they have 50,000 students. Out of those 50,000, they have 100 undergraduates who are majoring in Middle Eastern studies. When you look at study of Arabic languages, it's estimated now that we have something in this country like 100,000 people studying Russian. We have 5,500 people studying Arabic. And now we know that agencies in Washington, you know, the State Department, the FBI, the CIA, they're putting out this desperate call for people who speak Persian and Pashtun and Arabic. And it seems that we have a really crying need for people who study and understand the politics, the languages, and the culture of this part of the world. Do you think now universities move in the direction of perhaps trying to offer more opportunities to students who want to study these things?
Well, let me just comment upon this. On this campus, we do have a small but good Middle Eastern studies program. We do have a small but good Arabic program. But I quite agree. These are areas, at least in the study of the Arab states and the teaching of the cultural language, has not been as well developed as we should. And indeed, as you said, government agencies are just desperately looking for specialists in that part of the world, and we don't have them. I know from my own experience, and I also am head of the East Asian Studies Center on this campus, I know it was only after the Sputnik event of the 50s that this country suddenly became aware of the need to support the study of East Asian and South Asian languages. We need perhaps such a program for the study of the Arab culture and languages in this country, because we know, at least in that part of the world, if I'm not mistaken, the population, the Arab population, is at least 130 to 150 million. How can we neglect not knowing about that part of the world? So I am a person who am absolutely certain that we have to do something to remedy this hiatus.
I agree with what Professor Yu is saying, but if you look at it historically, that in the 50s and till about the mid-60s, there was a fair amount of funding for these kinds of programs, especially South Asia, East Asian countries. Then suddenly in the 80s, 70s and 80s, you find that there was a more emphasis because of the economic shift. More money was given for Japanese studies, for instance, because of the employment opportunities, trade and whatnot type of things. My only concern is that, number one, the academic institutions must support and strengthen their programs, not only South Asia or East Asia or West Asia, but the whole that part of the world. Mm-hmm. But the second part, which I'm more interested in also, is that we don't do that for the wrong reason, that we are not trying to educate our students to understand the culture, to understand the regional languages and whatnot type of things, to meet the needs of our law and order kind of things. But I think it has to have that kind of an academic integrity, because these programs are also very strong ones which can contribute to the ethnic studies. And that is a controversial issue which you see being debated now.
Well, let me also add, and I want to return to ethnic studies and to problems of racial profiling, which is the central topic this morning, I think, is that on this campus we have done a lot, though of course we could do more, of trying to promote different ethnic studies centers, such as Asian American, Latino, African American and others, because we realize that we live in a multicultural society. America's greatness is the fact that we bring together people of different backgrounds. But these people of different backgrounds are not always fully understood. And this, we have the question, among others, of racial profiling in a moment like this, namely suspicions that anybody who looks different or comes from a different background, who worships a different religion, therefore are suspect. And I think if there's anything that this lesson of 11th September can teach us, is that we cannot look at people at, shall we say, skin, a deep approach. We have to really understand what is the whole issue and what is the nature of this background and what do they do and how they have contributed to our society.
We have some callers to bring into the conversation. Let us do that. We're here at 333-9455. That's for Urbana folks, Champaign-Urbana folks. Toll-free 800-222-9455. As always, we welcome your input. We'll start here with Urbana and line one. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Yes, good. Thanks.
I would say that we need to be reminding people about the one reason not to profile is that we'll miss everybody else who may not fit the profile. I mean, if we're only looking for people from the Middle East, what happens if the next person comes from the United States or Europe? So we have to be careful not to profile just because we'll miss people that are going to cause problems.
Well, I would absolutely agree with you because we just cannot suspect or accuse one subgroup of America or one subgroup in the world population as being the only people who can do a mischief. As you said, we might miss out on another group. In fact, in this context, if we look at the pattern of the incidents so far, going back to the attacks upon the American embassy in Tanzania and Kenya, and then look at the previous attacks on the World Trade Building in the early 90s, and then look at the attacks upon the American warship Cole, and then we look again at 11 September, we see different targets. And these people obviously have been ahead of us in terms of their planning, which goes back to the point you are making. If we just look at one specific group by racial profiling them, we might miss indeed a lot that we should have been looking at in the first place.
Mm-hmm. We can't feel safe if we're only thinking of what happened in the past. I mean,
exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was the only comment I had to make.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the comment. Let's go to, we have another Urbana person. This is line two. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the former director of the Jewish Federation in Champaign-Urbana, and I'd like to raise another point here. Back in maybe 20 years ago, there was a rabbi who was a hothead. He was very vocal in his bigoted remarks. His name was Meir Kahana. He's had a lot of press. He was assassinated a number of years ago by one of the people who was implicated with the first World Trade Center bombing. He was ostracized by the organized Jewish community in America more than two decades ago. He was basically cut off from speaking in the Hillel foundations across the country, which are campus organizations for Jewish students. He was cut off from speaking at any main Jewish organizational event in the country. He moved to Israel, he became a member of the Knesset, and he was barred from the Knesset by the Israeli government because of the things that he said. The point I want to make is it's easier for each community to sort of police itself and to take care of its own people who respond like this. And so I'd like if the guest could comment on what's the responsibility of each community to take care of its own people who sort of create the problems? It's like, the very small percentage of people in each community that create the problems, whose responsibility is it to deal with them?
Mm-hmm. Now, the United States is a multicultural society with a pluralistic kind of cultural pluralistic ideology. Now, if we accept that as all citizens, then we have the responsibility for the country first. And that means if we find that there are some mischievers in our groups, then that means that group has got responsibility to take actions as well as notify the appropriate authorities. So I totally agree with you when you're saying that the Jewish organizations and institutions barred the infamous rabbi from coming and speaking I think that was a very correct and appropriate step which the Jewish institutions took. And I think that is similar if we do find that any of the ethnic groups members engage into such activities, they should not only be barred, but also have to be brought to the attention of the authorities.
If I may add a point here, I totally agree. However, I beg to differ in this sense, as in terms of what we are facing now is an American problem. Mm-hmm. It is not an Asian-American problem. Mm-hmm. It is not an Arab-American problem. It is not even a Jewish mm-hmm. problem alone. And we must act collectively. Mm-hmm. If we begin to separate ourselves into subgroups, I'm not sure we can survive the American dream. So while I commend you for the idea of self-policing, which I have no trouble with, I think we should also look at it in the a macro sense as a national problem.
And that's exactly what I was trying to say, that, you know, we are a multicultural society, multi-ethnic, multi-racial, now even multi-religious society. And that means we have got to accept the differences and diversity. And that means we have got to be willing to share the responsibility of the country as a one. And so we are primarily Americans. So I agree with Professor Yu that this kind of fragmentizing is not the right approach, except where I do agree with you by saying that many times the small ethnic groups might be aware of such rogues in their constituency, and so they can probably bring that to the attention.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me. So then what is the next step? How do we work together and encourage our own respective communities to do that, to bring people to the attention of the authorities or whoever whoever needs to know what people are actually saying?
Well, I don't think the problem is that simplistically solvable. I think if, like, for instance, what the president, after the September 11th incidents, as well as other leaders have done, is saying that this is not a war against Islam, this is not a war against Arab, but this is a war against terrorists. I was extremely impressed by the interfaith rally which was held in the Yankee Stadium, and to indicate, again, to reinforce the fact that it is a multi-ethnic, multi-religious country, which is this one. And I also feel very strongly that the political leaders as well as the civic leaders visiting each other's institutions, religious institutions. And lastly, I was reading the New York Times a couple of days ago where it was in the editorial and or in the op-ed section was indicated that the religious institutions and religious leaders have a very major responsibility in bringing this into their congregations and educating their people about the multi-ethnic nature of our society right now. So I think it's not simply to just go to the authorities that easily.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for the call. We have about 10 minutes or a little bit less in this part of Focus 580, talking with Joe Yu, who is head of East Asian studies here at the University of Illinois, professor of political science. Palasana Balgopal is emeritus professor of social work. We're talking about the issue of racial profiling in Asian Americans. And questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll free, 800-222-WILL. As you say, Professor Balgopal, it is, and we do have a multiracial, multicultural society. All at the same time, I think we have to acknowledge that this country has not always been welcoming, as welcoming as we might like. There have been Asian people coming from various places in Asia, coming and settling in the United States for a long time, and yet it seems fairly consistent that one hears Asian Americans talking about the feeling that they are still viewed, no matter how long they've been here, no matter how long their families have been here, still viewed as outsiders. Why do you think that is? And is that particularly more of an issue for Asian Americans than it might be or Americans of other kinds of ethnic background.
Absolutely, absolutely. excuse me. I have spent all my adult life in this country, but still I get questions. Do you like living in this country? When are you going back home? Now, my two adult daughters were born and brought up in this country. They still get the questions. Where are you from and when are you going back? Do you like living in this country? So those kinds of questions are going to be asked. Doesn't matter how long one lives, but I think what has happened is that, as you said, it is a multi-ethnic, multi-racial society, but we have a pecking order. And diversity was seen as exotic up to a while. But when that population started coming into a larger number, the dominant group is getting very threatened. At least I'm not talking about the entire dominant group, but at least a segment of the dominant group. Because they feel that these people are hardworking, they are going to take our jobs away, they are going to take the piece of the pie and we'll have to share with them, and these kinds of things. And so many times those individuals who do not fit the profile of the traditional European ethnicity, they are seen as foreigners and they are still seen as outsiders. And that will something which will take a long time. Now, of course, the profile of the American population is changing rapidly. And I hope that that kind of a differentiation will end. Hmm. But it's only a hope, at least, you know.
Well, let me return to a term I used earlier. Asian Americans among ourselves, as well as from non-Asian Americans, have always been given the idea that we are forever foreign. And it's partly, if not mainly, because physically in our appearance we do look different from the dominant group. I'll give you a personal example. I was at a friend's house at a party over a weekend, and I met a senior professor here, and after talking to him for a while, he said, gee, you speak quite good English, don't you? Well, implicit in his remark, of course, was that I didn't look American, and therefore why should I be able to speak English? I don't want to condemn this person, our senior colleague, but this is very common among the general population here. And these anti-outsiders, you know, type of sentiments usually occur during times of stress, economic stress, and then when we have these bombings. Then people begin to differentiate between the insider and the outsiders. And unfortunately for Asian Americans in times of stress, but there's always this latent sense that we are foreigners. We are not really genuine Americans, even though, as Professor Bhargava said, and I can say, our children were born and raised here, their children are being born and raised here. We are as much Americans as you are, David, as anybody who is an American. And yet, we still face this everyday, shall we say, outsider type of attitudes being held by others. How is this going to be overcome? Well, on this campus, we have the various ethnic studies program. We are trying to raise awareness, and hopefully we will contribute to the gradual erasement of these insider-outsiders type of attitudes.
Hmm. Only a few years ago, I will make this very short, my wife and I, we were driving, going to Tuscola, and some of the other police officer stopped me, and he said he felt that I had violated some traffic things, but I don't think I did. So then he says that I'm going to give you a warning citation, and I said fine. So when he comes back and he says, in our country we don't drive like this, And after I got the citation in my hand, and I looked at him and I says, you know something, officer, this is my country, this is my county, this is my town. And I says, you just violated my civil rights. And I says, I hope you understand that. You know, you cannot judge people and start telling who they are. So, you know, these kinds of things is very prevalent. And I think half the time it is ignorance, half the time it is fear, half the time it is prejudice.
Well, I think that would be a good point for us to stop, which we must do in any case because we've here come to the end of the time. One more time, I do want to mention that, again, the Fall 2001 Asian American Studies Program Council meeting taking place on the University of Illinois campus, Latzer Hall, 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. That's at 1001 South Wright at the University of Y. Our guests here, George Yu, Palasana Balgopal, and others, will be having a panel discussion of this issue, racial profiling in Asian Americans. And anyone who is in and around the campus who is interested in listening in, taking part in that conversation, they should feel welcome to attend. And I want to say to the two of you both, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.